You're listening to the MLB.com Hot Stove Podcast.
Welcome into MLB.com's Hot Stove Podcast. Tim McMaster here along with Jim Duquette. And finally, we had a big weekend of news in baseball, lots of signings, and we were kind of waiting for this to happen as slowly guys started to sign. But in one weekend, we got Chris Davis back to the Orioles. Justin Upton goes to the Tigers. Ian Kennedy also going to the Kansas City Royals. So you have those three guys over a three-day weekend. So good news. So let's start there and get right into that. Let's start with Davis because that Davis deal happened first. And in the end, the Orioles get their guy, but boy, did they have to wait.
Yeah, it was the first deal, and it was the biggest deal. And, you know, they gave a lot of money. There's no question. And they had to wait. I think it was interesting strategy by the Orioles. They went out the day before it got done and basically offered a deal that if Yoenis Cespedes had taken it, would have taken him out of the Chris Davis market. But it was a low enough deal that was not likely Davis was ready to take it quite yet. So I think that's part of it. But I think that it played exactly the way they wanted to. If they had been able to do this earlier, I don't know if it would have gotten the same play or the same, you know, if it would have resonated the same with the Boris and Davis camp, that threat of signing somewhere else. But because we're in the middle of January and it is getting a little bit late, and because they had exhausted most of the other teams out there and there wasn't anyone going to go to that level, I think the combination of the two is what got this thing done so quickly. And ironically, almost 24 hours after the report out there that they had made an offer to Cespedes.
You got to give Boris some credit as well, I think, because the money still goes up. Even though we never heard about any other team being involved in Davis, he still gets the Orioles up to 161. But a lot of that money will come later. And I think I've heard the actual value, real-time value, around 150, which is where the Orioles wanted to be in this from the start. So in the end, both teams happy. My question, though, is can the Orioles still – can they improve their team? Because now they've spent a lot of money, but they've brought back guys they already had. O'Day, Davis, they did bring in Mark Trumbo. But can they still make a move for a pitcher to get this team better than what it was?
Right, and I think you bring up a good point. You know, present-day value versus with the deferred comp, what's the total overall value? It doesn't necessarily matter as long as it doesn't disrupt what the Orioles are supposed to do. And so that part of it, I think, remains to be seen. Now, they have been saying all along that they wanted Davis as their number one priority, and they also wanted to improve on the pitching. Now, there's not an awful lot of pitching left. It's been very expensive. But the names that you're going to continue to hear, Yovani Gallardo, while he's still out there, Doug Fister, while he's still out there. You'll hear a little bit of Matt Latos, although I don't think they're going to go down that road. Cliff Lee, possibly as well. But I think the top two on the Orioles pref list would be Gallardo and Fister. And it's really going to come down to the dollars. And trying to, each one of those two guys, they pitch, they've gotten success, had success in the American League. So that helps. And it just becomes about what's the best in terms of risk and dollars. Gallardo comes with giving up the draft pick, and the Orioles pick number 14, and that's something that they value very high. Not likely they're going to give that up, although, you know, things change, you know, the later you go. But right now, I think they're leaning towards keeping that pick, which would knock them out of Gallardo.
Yeah, the Orioles lined up to possibly have a real big draft day with a lot. It could have been even better if Wieters had not taken the option. But I think right now, six picks in the top 90 or something like that, a real chance for them to, and they need it. They need to get some young talent into that organization, so a real opportunity to do that. One of the guys you would have thought would have been one of those guys they'd be looking at would have been Ian Kennedy, but he's found a home in Kansas City. I was a little surprised to see Kennedy go to the American League, but I guess if you're going to go to the AL and you're a fly ball pitcher, no better spot than Kansas City.
To go to Kansas City and go back and be reunited with your old pitching coach from the Yankees and Dave Island, who now is the pitching coach with the Royals. And I think that did play into it a little bit too, but you're right. I think there's a couple things. He's a fly ball pitcher that worked well there. His strikeouts and his velocity were up. That's, you know, the last 2 years in particular, strikeouts per nine were up, were over nine per nine innings. And so I think that plays well for them. They need innings there. He's been a guy that's given them innings, given up, has pitched a lot of innings. He's been prone to that fly ball, too, or the home run last year, over 30 home runs at Petco Park. But I think that, you know, you look at that defense, if he you know, mixes up his pitches and can get the ball down the strike zone a little bit more, he'll benefit from the good defense. They have a real good outfield defense as well in Kansas City. So I think this is going to be one of those sleeper moves. Even though it is expensive right now on the surface, I think that this will end up working out for Kansas City.
So the champs get Kennedy, they bring back Alex Gordon. I don't think anybody really thought that was something that could happen. So when you look at this team and obviously the window they have, they got to be right in that discussion, right, as a team that could get back to that World Series for a third straight year.
And I think that is, obviously that's their goal. And, you know, they've taken their payroll up to $130 million, credit their owner for that, but also credit the fan base for going to the games, right? I mean, that's where you make a lot of your money and the ability to afford it. So, you know, I think I talked to somebody there recently. They are suggesting that, you know, they'd like to get another starter, a veteran type of starter. Wouldn't be surprised. Gallardo has been on their mix. So, I wouldn't be surprised in that sense. They've already given up a draft pick. It gets easier to give up draft picks, obviously. So if you're going to do that, might as well pick 1 year. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see them in on Gallardo as well.
All right, the other big deal of the weekend was Justin Upton. He goes to the Tigers. And the Tigers, you keep thinking, they're not going to give away any more $100 million contracts. Then they go get Jordan Zimmerman. Now, well, that's it for sure. And then go and get Justin Upton. They just keep spending. At some point, I feel like this spending has to catch up with them. They have Cabrera, who signed through at least 2023, and that money goes way up into the $30 million range. You have V-Mart for a couple more years. Now you have these two other deals. But they have an owner that doesn't even bat an eye, it seems like.
Doesn't bat an eye. And I think you have to give him credit, obviously, because he's kept the prices down, too, so it's affordable for their fan base. And that's why they've drawn so well. I think that this is one of those, only the second team in history to spend over $100 million on more than one free agent in the same year. Yankees did it twice. Last time they did, I think, was 09. They went on to win the World Series. But, you know, I think that, you know, from the Tigers' standpoint, they are significantly better, no question. That's a real a fearsome offense, an offense that, quite frankly, wasn't very good last year. You know, Miggy was out for a while. V-Mart was hurt and not swinging the bat well. Cespedes was traded. This is the worst offensive team they had since, I believe, 2003 in terms of runs scored. So they needed the offense. They needed the pitching. They got the pitching in Zimmerman. They needed bullpen help. They got K-Rod. They needed defensive help. They got Cameron Maven Center. It's really been an active first winter for Al Avila, the new GM there.
Yeah, he stepped right in and certainly put his stamp on that organization. Now, you mentioned they're clearly better. But they weren't good in 2015 after dominating that division for so long. Are they better enough to catch the Royals when we've seen the moves the Royals have made?
You know, I think a lot of it is going to come down to their health. I mean, Victor Martinez is the one big left-handed bat in that lineup. It's a very right-handed lineup now with Upton there. But if he can come back to health, they can catch the ball. Verlander, you know, would pitch well when he came back there in the middle of the season. If he can continue that, you know, Sanchez is going to have to stay healthy. But I think they have all the pieces now, including the infield defense, to be in that mix again and get themselves back where they expected to be, where they had been during that window prior to last year. So Kansas City going to have their hands full, you know, and I think that's a tough, tough division, as we've seen. American League, the entire American League's tough, but the American League Central in particular. Minnesota certainly, as we know, is on the rise. Cleveland has the great starting pitching. So, you know, you go through that. And, you know, even the White Sox, they seem like they're another move potentially this winter, too. I don't know how you end up, competing in that division with having five teams there, all looking like they could be 500 or better.
And you talk about these contracts for the Tigers. I'm not sure Upton fits exactly into what you could say are going to be bad contracts, because 6 years, and he's younger than a lot of these other free agents. He's still going to be just 34, I guess, 35 when this deal ends. So really, 6 years, 132, he'll be at the end of his prime. This isn't one of those deals where you can see a nightmare scenario at the end of it.
Yeah, Victor Martinez, I think they're sweating out. Verlander, they're kind of sweating out. Right. Miggy, even, they might be sweating out. This is one with Upton. He mentioned, you know, he's still at the tail end of his prime, 32, 33, 34, in that range. And so I think he still has he'll have something left in his contract to be able to, you know, live up to the terms of it, which you're expecting. And I think the other thing is, he's been a guy that's not been a part of a big offensive team the last three seasons, being in Atlanta and San Diego, Upton hasn't. So now he goes to a team where he actually has some protection and he has some support, and I really think that that's going to boost his game as well.
Yeah, and a lot of eyes maybe not on him. You bring him in with a big contract, but Miggy's still the guy and V-Mart's still popular, so maybe he can kind of be that secondary guy where he's had to be the guy in a lot of the stops that he's been at. So that leaves one big bat still out there. And the big question, I think, is why? Yoenis Cespedes still out there. Upton had a pick connected to him. Cespedes doesn't. Cespedes, I think a lot of people would say, better defensively. Why is it that not only is he still out there, but it seems like teams are waiting for him to maybe want to take a shorter-term deal?
There's a little bit of conversation within some circles of the teams that have had him in the past that they're not quite sure from a makeup standpoint if you could trust him for a multi-year deal, 7 years, 6 years, something along those lines. And so that's reflective in the market. The agent, still a very good agent, Roc Nation, of course, and Brody Van Wagenen, very experienced agents. They're trying to push the envelope, and I wouldn't bet against them getting close to what Upton is, but there's a lot of teams that are waiting and saying, listen, I'm not willing to go to that length, that 5, 6 years, 7 years. I think it's coming back to 4 or 5, somewhere in that range, and I think if you're in that area, then you're going to have a lot more interest. I think, you know, San Diego, we hear, Atlanta potentially, the White Sox, the Nationals now, you hear, I mean, there's a bunch of teams that could use him and are starting to do more than kick the tires on him because they feel like the value is around that $90 to $100 million. I wouldn't be surprised if he signed somewhere in that range. Now, what team? It's you're almost throwing darts in the dark on that one.
What a shot at the Mets it would be if the Nationals swooped in and get Cespedes. How short a deal would it have to come back to for the Mets to seriously consider bringing back Cespedes?
You know, I'm told the Mets are looking at it anywhere from 1, 2, or 3 years.
3 years.
Somewhere in that range, you know, and I think that's the interesting thing is, does the player really want to stay in New York and sign a lesser deal with maybe an out clause to go back out in the marketplace either next year or after that? Or does he want to take the guarantee? Because I do think there'll be teams out there that will look at a 4 or 5 year deal for him. And I think if you're a team that is willing to go to 4 or 5 years, you're in the mix. You're going to get, you have a real good chance of getting them. So he's going to have some options. It's not, I don't think it's going to be a 1 year deal. I do think it's going to be multi-year, and it's just a matter of where does he want to play? Where does he want to go? You know, he fit very well in New York and he seemed to fit well in the spotlight. And I think that's, you know, it's going to be very tough for him to turn that down if it's within a year or so.
Now that he's the only guy left when you talk about that caliber of player, should this move quickly? Should it? I mean, within the next week, maybe?
You would think so. And listen, I thought it was going to happen by the end of this week, and I really thought Detroit was going to be the team. I got the right team, not the right player. But I think that, you know, the way the market has been moving now with these, you know, guys we've already spoken about, I do think that Cespedes maybe, you know, wrapping through the weekend into early next week. The agent, as of Sunday, told me that it was likely the next 5 or 6 days that they were going to try to get something done. It had heated up. He said there was as many as 10 teams. Obviously, they're not all at the level of interest that you can say you're going to deal with them. But you start to narrow that focus, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's something on the horizon here in the next couple of days.
We've talked about before that pick attachment that Cespedes doesn't have and how it can affect these guys. And it always seems like in the recent years, since they've added this, that there's one guy that has to wait and wait and wait. I thought it was going to be Ian Kennedy. Mm-hmm. But now it's starting to look like it's going to be Yovani Gallardo. Are you surprised at that? That Gallardo's a guy that's still out there and maybe waiting a while still?
A little bit surprised because of the success of pitching in both the American League and National League. You know, he's a guy that you're still looking at 4 years, right around $50 million. I think he gets close to that. The one issue is we've seen the velocity tail down and his strikeouts per nine go backwards. And so, again, you're trying to find reasons why the market is what it is. It's those players that are sitting there with maybe a little bit of a flag or some smoke around them somehow, some way. That's why they're sitting there. Still teams, though, that are active. Kansas City still. Orioles, Blue Jays, among others. Those are three teams. And, you know, there's one thing in common. All American League teams, you know. So you know, there's no real, I think, concern from that side of things that he can't get outs, even though we've seen the strikeouts go backwards.
Early in the offseason, we heard a lot of talk about Jonathan Lucroy, trade possibilities. The Brewers are on the rebuild. Here's a guy that has a great contract as far as any other team would want to bring him in. And yes, he's coming off a down year, but he's a guy that's not that old, and he's proven himself over the past. And now Lucroy has come out and said, yeah, it would probably be good for the team and good for me if I was traded somewhere else. Does this kick back up? Is this something that could still happen this offseason, or is this something that may be closer to a trade deadline type thing? Because when you look at what he's got left, $4 million this year. If you see the Jonathan Lucroy of 2014 for $4 million. I mean, what a bargain. And then a club option for 2017. So if he is good, you can get him for another year as well. What is the likelihood that Lucroy does get moved?
Listen, I wrote an article for MLB about the possibility of Lucroy being traded, and one of the best possibilities or fits is Texas, and it still is a fit, and there's been a lot of rumor, a lot of talk about that, and I wouldn't be surprised if they go down that road to try to upgrade there. Angels need catching for sure. Diamondbacks have kicked the tires on Lucroy, so there's plenty of teams there. It's a matter of can they work out a deal, and yeah, it's a tough one for the new GM there, David Stearns in Milwaukee, because you're wanting – It's a valuable contract, as you mentioned. Likely you would pick up that option. It's like $5.5 million, a real reasonable club option. And you're expecting to try to get back talent for an all-star type of catcher, which is what I expect he will be this year. He's still in his prime, even though he had a down year last year.
Right.
But as we know, the market usually you take a hit when you don't have a good year. And so that's the hard part is how do you ask for value for a player that didn't show it in 2015? And if you're an opposing team, you're wondering, are we starting to see the decline of a catcher? We know he's had an impactful game. You know, it's an impactful position. So, to me, there's plenty of teams out there that could use him and need him. I wouldn't be surprised if something got done, but it may have to wait till the season.
Maybe even we see and he gets at-bats in spring training. Teams will suddenly get a look at how healthy he is, how he's swinging the bat.
And get a look at their own catching and say, yeah, boy, we really need a guy. You know, I mean, that's where the old self-evaluation comes in.
Yeah, because he's always been known as a good clubhouse guy, right, too. A guy that you just want on your team. All right, we had news just today. There have been rumors of this last week, I guess. But we're just hearing now, officially, Fernando Rodney heading to the San Diego Padres. Obviously, the Padres are a team that traded away Craig Kimbrell, got a load of talent back from the Red Sox. But there goes your closer. They also lost Benoit. So really, when you look down at that bullpen in San Diego, there's no closing experience. So Rodney makes sense. I think it's a one-year deal. Could be some big incentives there. This makes sense for player and team?
It makes perfect sense, and not surprised. Listen, last year, the only issue with him in Seattle was he had trouble with his command. And getting back to that and being able to throw strikes is the most important thing. And Darren Balsley, the pitching coach in San Diego, is one of the best in terms of dealing with pitchers' mechanics. I think it's just a small little tweak. The velocity's there. The fastball, there is no drop in stuff. Lloyd McClendon told me that many times last year that, you know, the stuff was there. So I think this has a chance. If there's going to be a bounce-back guy, he's one of those guys that I would say for sure you keep an eye on. And I do like the fit there in San Diego. He's going to get the opportunity to close it out. And I think he'll be motivated, you know, to go back out there and keep pitching. So I like the fit overall, especially, as you mentioned, the two guys, Benoit and Kimbrough, are gone now.
And you don't expect the Padres to contend. So I would think if he does have a nice season come July, he's a great another opportunity. You see this with teams rebuilding now. You sign a guy in the offseason with the big thought that, hey, we could flip him at the trade deadline.
And he can pitch in the eighth inning, too. So you're not confined to saying, well, just a closer's role at the deadline. You could, he could bulk up any bullpen. So I think it's a smart move for the Padres. In a rebuild season, as you mentioned, they go out, they get a guy, helps them win as many games as they can. And at the deadline, you're able to get back some kind of piece or maybe two that'll help your organization long term.
All right, that is going to do it for us. Tell you what, we're about a month away from spring training. We're getting there, but there's still players
out
there.
Still some guys. I like it.
Still some guys. So still some stuff to talk about. For Jim Duquette, Tim McMaster, thanks for listening in to the MLB.com Hot Stove Podcast. We'll join you again next week.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.